Hey, what's up? I'm Mo.
And I'm J.O.
And you're listening to Mojo and the Outsiders podcast brought to you by Backwoods Adventure Mods. Today, we're going to have the founder of Backwoods, Mr. Evan House, on. Talk SEMA builds, two-wheeled fun, and CAD drawings. Not the ones you're thinking of. So today we're sitting here with Evan House, the manipulator of metal, the lead brainiac over there at 78. He's the one who gets it done. He's going to tell us a little bit about how this thing got started.
Yeah, so it was back in 2007, and I had purchased a bumper for my truck at the time on Craigslist before Marketplace was really a thing, and it was like $200. So even then, that was a really good deal. And I had a buddy who thought that was really cool but couldn't find a good deal. And then we both kind of wanted a matching bumper for the front or the back, respectively. So I thought, well, I've got a welder. And he said, you should try it out. You should try to make one. So we did. And it wasn't as hard as I thought, although looking back, I saw a picture of it, and maybe it wasn't quite as good of a product as I thought initially. But it got it started. And I built a few more for some local guys, and somebody put it on a forum, and then I joined the forum, and questions started flowing, and other people said they wanted them. Well, it just kind of started really organically like that. So like you mentioned, it was actually in like a lean-to behind my dad's shop. So it was open walls, just a roof, and I started with like $5,000 to pick up an entry-level welder. I was borrowing a plasma cutter, and it was a big deal to go buy one sheet of metal, which that time was $75. I wish I could get steel for $75 now.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. We still get calls from customers that remember going to that lean-to, you know, and stuff like that. Still remember meeting you, you know, and having you build a bumper for them and stuff. So how long do you think that process took, you know, that first one? You know, was it a lot of cut, bend, and then redo it again? Or did you kind of know what you were trying to do when you went into it?
Oh, no, I had no clue. And you say cut, bend, but what's funny is there was actually no bend on those early ones. I didn't have a brake, so it was a lot of cut and weld and a lot of grind as I went through the learning process.
Did you know how to weld beforehand, or was it just kind of more or less just personal stuff and then kind of turned it more into a business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely didn't intend to turn it into a business at the start. I had some basic welding skills from growing up on a farm, a lot of tractor and trailer and brush hog type repairs, but I'd never created a product, and especially not a product that I intended to sell. So it was definitely a very organic process.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that seems to be the best way to do it a lot of times. You know, I mean, I've never personally really started a business, but it definitely seems like the people that do start businesses, you know, with the mindset of, oh, I'm just doing this to make money, you know, they just don't seem to last as long as the ones that really just do it because they're passionate and organic. So no, that's definitely awesome.
I mean, you talk about the organic growth side of things, you know, so you start seeing your name pop up on forums, seeing your bumper pop up on forums, you know, how did you choose, you know, the number you were going to build? You know, did you say, okay, well, I'll build five, or was it people hitting you up and you were kind of doing build to order, or did you?
I was finished college at the time. And I also had started a part-time job as it was a heavy equipment mechanic. So this was all during nights and weekends and free time. So I think that first one, to answer your previous question, I think it took me maybe upwards of, I don't know, over a week.
Yeah.
Just a few hours here and there, nights and evenings, weekends. Yeah. And then once they went up on forums, I knew that I could probably turn one around in a couple weeks, because that was probably my only order. Looking back, all this stuff makes sense because all the big manufacturers had long lead times, higher prices. Of course, you know, they were actually running a legitimate business, but you know, what I didn't know seemed to end up helping out in the long run.
With being custom to start, did you ever get any like odd vehicle requests? You know, like somebody's got this old truck and they need this bumper. You know, did you kind of do one-offs for people that asked, or were you kind of trying to stick to a year make model?
Well, at first I ended up sticking to a year make model just because the forum I was on was specific to second generation Dodge diesel. So I did a ton of those, and that's what I drove at the time. I had a 99 model, and that truck actually was my jig. I bet I built 100 bumpers one piece at a time on that truck before somebody suggested that I actually create a jig, which seems so simple looking back.
Well, like you said, you know, when you don't know, you don't know these easier ways, you know, so I can see you jumping in and like, it makes sense, right? You build it on the truck, you know, it fits, you know, all the pieces line up, but
that's
you
right.
know, like yeah. you said, you know, somebody mentioned in a jig, somebody's probably done it longer, you know, like that stuff's just handy and it helps you grow, probably got better, faster and stuff like that, and able to turn them out quicker.
Yeah, same with the press brake. You know, a local fabricator here that I'm good friends with now actually suggested that, and I had to ask what a press brake was. but also on the one-off versus a line of products, it was Dodge stuff for a long time. Then as the new body styles came out, I rolled with those. But then I did get some oddball requests, which the oddest one, and this may segue into one of your later questions, so I'll keep it simple, but a local cabinet maker here, Jason Justice, he bought the first four-wheel drive Sprinter van, and this was long about 2015 at this point. And he brought it to me because I built him some stuff in the past.
Yeah.
And he said he wanted a bumper for his van, and I thought that was the craziest idea. You know, the camper van wave was still really, really underground. And this was the first year of the four-wheel drive Sprinters. He had the first one in Northwest Arkansas, so I ended up taking him up on that and building something that was pretty cool, but it's a lot different than what we make now.
So 2007 to 2015, was there a time in there where you were like, okay, I'm gonna put this mechanic business to the side and building bumpers is what I'm gonna do?
Yeah, that's right. So I think that was about 2011 or 12, and I can't remember which exactly, but I quit my job. They let me drop down to part-time, so I'd quit at noon, which was really cool of them and really helped me looking back.
Yeah.
And made the jump. And about that same time, a little bit before, it was when I built the first shop that we started in, the first real facility. So I went from the lean-to kind of shared space to a 4,000 square foot shop that I put up on some family land.
Yeah, walls on all sides.
That's right. Four walls was a big improvement.
Yeah. How wild of a feeling was that, you know, to look from the beginning to all of a sudden you're in a 4,000 square foot shop, you know, a few years later. I mean, was that like just a wild feeling?
It was, I don't know if intimidating is the right word, but I definitely felt the pressure of responsibility.
Yeah.
Maybe for the first time on that level, because at that point you're committed, you know, no real job. And then to me, that was a big building and a big financial commitment.
Yeah. No, I mean, it would definitely be something that would make, you know, I think most people nervous. You know, you go from just doing it because you love it. And then, yeah, like you said, next thing you know, you have a responsibility and you're like, what am I doing? So, no, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, my hat's off to anyone that's willing to take, you know, a big jump like that for sure. So,
well, I was going to say, it's just a leap, right? You know that you've got something that's selling, but how long is that going to continue? You know, does it continue enough for you to, you know, pay for your new shop and stuff like that? So I'm sure it was a huge commitment for you to dive into. And like I said, no more money coming in from real job, you know, so you got to make ends meet with what you've got. So probably put a little fire underneath you, get you going as well.
It did. But, you know, another thing that before, let's see, I guess that was about the same time I got married, but we were newlyweds and didn't have any kids, you know, we had a puppy. So I think when you're in that stage of life, it's easy to have some extra confidence. Maybe that's not even warranted because what you don't know.
Yeah. Was Morgan behind this as well? Was she like, do it, Evan, you got to do this? Or was she kind of hesitant as well to get you out there full time?
She's always been 100% supportive of anything to do with the business or anything in life, really. And that's why we have such a great marriage. But she'll tell you she's been along for the ride all the way.
Ups and downs, all the bumpers in between.
Yeah, lots of late nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet she always seems super helpful, super kind. Like you said, it takes somebody like that in your corner to kind of, you know, sometimes help push you along. You know, you start second guessing yourself. And when you got a partner like that who's behind you 100%, it kind of gives you that confidence to continue and grow with it. So yeah, hats off to you both, really.
Oh, absolutely, man. And well, and you know, one thing that I've kind of always wondered, I've always meant to ask you, but what is the easiest, or not even the easiest, what is your favorite backwoods product you've ever designed? And what would be the hardest backwoods product you've ever designed?
Man, that's a really tough question. Depends on how you look at it. One of the favorites now, and this is from the newer era of backwoods, is the Sprinter front bumper. And because of the backstory that I just laid out, and it's become our best-selling product, hands down, over time, especially the way it's evolved from a single piece of steel to this really cool hybrid unit that's had a bunch of offshoots and different products. So that's probably my favorite, just because of what it led to and what it created.
And that's, you know, like you touched on, you know, that first Sprinter bumper, you know, it's funny to think where, you know, it was a crazy request. And then now looking forward, you know, it's the product we've sold the most of, you know, so it's very cool, very forward thinking, you know, like you said, you see these vans and you wouldn't think anybody would want a bumper like that, but.
I wouldn't say it was forward thinking at the time, because after I made that first bumper, it was a custom unit made by hand. So I used foam core templates. I threw the templates away. Oh, man. I thought I would never get that request again.
One off, never, ever to be done again. Right. No, it certainly grew, you know. And so was it 2017 around there? Is that when you and Chris had kind of got together, you know, to discuss this merger? Or?
That's right. Yeah. So my product line had grown to most 3/4 ton and 1 ton late model trucks and the Sprinter. So in between that 2015 and 2017 timeline, that was when I learned a little bit more that the Sprinter wasn't something that you should just cast aside. You know, it's a big deal. It's important. People care, and it's a really cool growing trend. And then in 2017, I guess we were getting ready for the SEMA season, and I was looking for another SEMA build because we'd done that a few times. And a friend of mine that worked at the local metal distributor left that job to come work for Chandler. And he was telling me how cool their toolboxes were and all the other products and how good of a place it was. And he said that we could probably partner up in some capacity on a SEMA build. So that introduced me to Chris, and we didn't end up doing a SEMA build, but it turned into so much more than that.
Yeah.
So we talked about a SEMA build, and that kind of led in conversation to, well, he asked me, what are your needs? How can we help you? Maybe we can supply some parts. You know, we have a really nice brake. You know, we have a laser. We have all these cool tools. Maybe you can put in an order for cut and bent parts, and that'll help us both out.
Yeah. I mean, that's super cool. I've kind of heard the story, you know, of a late night run in Vegas and you and Chris kind of making this deal happen, you know, overnight, really taking it, you know, from where it was, where you'd grown it to, and, you know, Chris being able to put more into it and everything and keep this brand growing. So,
yeah, that was a really cool story. So, we had talks about, you know, how to partner up, but it hadn't really come to anything. But one of the people here, Ty, you know, everybody knows Ty.
Mm-hmm.
He and I hit it off immediately. And we stayed in touch just a little bit at first. And when we had, my wife and I and a couple employees had made it to Vegas and our first night there, as soon as we got downstairs from the hotel we were staying at, I can't remember which hotel, but in the lobby, I heard Ty.
Right, he was probably standing across the street.
next hotel over. Yeah. No, they were sitting there at the blackjack table, and I heard a familiar sounding voice, and I looked, and you know, he's super tall too, so I recognized him right out of the gate, and kind of ran up to him and scared him, you know, and said hi. And
yeah,
Chris was there, and some of the other members of the team, so we got to hang out, get dinner together, break bread, and just enjoy the show.
Yeah. So you're obviously into cars before, you know, the bumpers, if you're doing SEMA builds and stuff like that, you know, so what would have been like your favorite SEMA build that you had ever done? I mean, I've seen a couple of them and they all look super rad.
Yeah, we did a couple cool solid axle conversions, and those are always cool because you take a truck that's independent suspension and you just rip everything out from underneath it.
Right.
Those are really cool, but probably the most unique one was I've always been into pre-runner type builds.
Mm-hmm.
So I did one on an SUV. I grabbed a Yukon Denali, which I had to look specifically for a two-wheel drive so I could get the long travel. And I ordered a long travel kit for a Silverado and made it fit the Yukon. I did a truck conversion to the front end so I could use a big fiberglass one piece front end, and I put some flares on the back and did long travel. So it was unique. It had a supercharger,
yeah,
six liter, all the cool stuff.
I mean, had enough get up and go. I know we still see one of your trucks driving around. I don't know if it was one you built for SEMA, but the Silverado we'll see from time to time, you know, with the glass on the fenders and stuff.
Yeah, that was a little bit later, a few years later, but that was a personal project.
I mean,
cool truck.
Oh, very, very cool. It's just, like I said, it's funny. It seems like there's not anything you don't get into. If it's gas-powered, it seems like you're slightly interested.
I'm a big fan of any kind of motorsports. Yeah, dirt bikes, but even if it's pedal-powered, you know, that's a big one too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And those are definitely things, like I said, they all kind of tie together, all into the outdoors, out to have fun and stuff like that.
Yeah. I know Mo told me one day, he's like, man, he said, I know Evan, you know, he can come off as very, like, you know, laid back, casual and stuff. And he said, he is. But he said, man, as soon as you get him on some type of motorcycle or something like that, he said, I seriously watch Evan ride a wheelie through a stoplight one day.
that was in Mexico, of course.
Yeah.
It was probably a green light.
100% a green light, but... Yeah, I remember sitting at the intersection and seeing this bike come through riding one wheel, and I was like, you know, and then I get to work and I'm like, oh, yep, I know. I just saw that bike and it seems like it does fun stuff. So, the good toys right before the kids come along, ripping wheelies and stuff like that. But I know you're an avid mountain biker as well, you and Morgan both, you know. Any favorite places out here you like to get away, do stuff like that?
Oh, man, there's so many. Where do you start? We're down in Fayetteville, so we love Kessler. It's all, you know, hand-built, single track with cool features. So that, Centennial, can't go wrong up in Bentonville, of course.
No.
Slaughterpin, Kohler, I mean, everywhere.
When you guys are you on, like, part of, like the trail repair team? It seems like you guys are always doing, like, work days out on the trails and stuff like that. You know, a lot of these nicer weekends, keeping the trails in shape for folks like us to ride down.
Yeah, so Kessler down in Fayetteville is almost 100% built by the Ozark Off-Road Cyclist. So Morgan did a stint as a vice president, and we both volunteer and help build trail. We haven't as much lately, but we help where we can.
Oh, absolutely right. Life shows up sometimes. You can't give all your free time. Sometimes raising kids will happen as well.
Yeah, that'll happen.
How long have you been riding mountain bikes?
I think my story is a lot like a lot of people around here, because like everybody, I grew up as a kid with bikes, but the trails then weren't what we have now.
Yeah.
So I think we got back into it pretty heavily around 2018 or so.
Okay.
Yeah. No, like you're saying, right? You know, I can remember just ripping down a dirt road. You know, like that was your riding as a kid growing up. You know, you took off, rode to the creek, rode it back to, you know, the house afterwards. So certainly crazy to see what it's become in this area.
Yeah. I remember, you know, when bikes used to just be something you'd buy just to hang out with your buddies.
And yeah, now exactly.
It's still something you buy to hang out with your buddies, you know, but it's just, yeah, like you're saying, I mean, it's just nuts how big it's gotten. You know?
They cost a little more now too.
They definitely cost a little more.
Oh my gosh. Right. Like everything, you know, and just like everything, as soon as you buy it, it went down, you know, half its value as soon as you put tires on dirt. So.
Oh, I remember along that 2018 timeline that I was telling you, I have a buddy, Corey, he's big into the mountain biking scene. And I said, I think I'm going to look for a bike. He said, what's your budget? And I thought really hard for a long time. And I said, I think $500 would buy me something really nice, although I hate to spend that much. he said, you may need to look around a little bit. Things aren't what you remember.
No, right now, right, you couldn't get anything, barely get components, you know, for a bike for $500.
You know? Yeah. You know, it's funny, though, because it's like people, especially with mountain bikes, they always have different perspectives. Like, I got a buddy that he's real into banjos and mandolin, and, I mean, plays a ton of it. And it's funny because he wanted to get into mountain bike, and he asked me, he said, man, you know, about what do you think I need to spend to buy like a decent bike? And I said, I recommend doing a hardtail first, but if you want to do a full suspension, I said, dude, you're going to be, you know, for a decent one, used, you know, probably $2,000. And he looked at me and he said, you're telling me a bike is $2,000? And I was like, Dylan, you just showed me a $20,000 mandolin yesterday. And he was like, well, yeah, I mean, that's worth $20,000 for a mandolin. You know, I don't see why a bike would be that much. I'm like, so it's just funny how, yeah, the perspectives are always funny to hear.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's different for everybody. I mean, my left sock has two holes in it that I'm wearing today. I'm not going to buy a new pair.
No, right, right. Still covers the heel and most of the foot. It's in good shape. No, right. You pick a... pick the things that you really want to spend your money on, you know.
That's right.
Bikes, trips, adventures, you know, and the rest of that stuff you can make do with. You yeah. said a hole in the sock, man. I'll get you through the day, get you on a sweet bike, then that's what I'd do too.
Oh, yeah. Know,
with, you know, anytime you can stretch those dollars out.
So this is a this was a question that I really was definitely wanting to hear because I've always been, you know, curious. What has been... it was the question I asked earlier. What is the hardest product you've ever had to design? Or is there one? Is there one that's just like really giving you a lot of challenges, but when you nailed it, you're like, this is it.
Usually what makes something hard is when there's lack of direction. So with custom commissioned projects, you see that a lot. And what I learned the hard way to look out for is when somebody says, you know, I'm not picky, just do something cool. So they basically said, I don't have any idea what it is that I'm looking for, but just use your judgment and build something cool. And more than once, I did something that I was really proud of, thought it was awesome. The guy shows up and said, well, it's cool, but it's not what I had in mind. It's like,
you didn't have anything in mind, or if you did, you should have told me. So really, that's on you.
So I learned to get at least some sort of napkin sketch and share progress pictures along the way. As far as actually a product that's hard to build, for me, it's anything that's three-dimensional in the sense of tubing. So whether it's a really intricate grill guard or a roll cage, exoskeleton, something like that. Because not only is that tricky to get right, once you get the one side of the vehicle done, then you have to mirror it perfectly on the other side. So a lot of mistakes can happen.
Now you're completely self-taught, correct? You know, like you kind of taught all your skills and how all this works, you know, stuff like that. So
but there's been a lot of positive influence from other fabricators that were older than me, a little bit further along than me when I started. So yeah, I'm self-taught, but with a lot of positive influence from local guys.
I mean, how lucky is that? Like you said, you meet a metal guy and he turns you on to Chris, and then next thing you know, you've got nice tools at your disposal and stuff like that, and kind of help push you along and everything, and make anything easier is always nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, because I just assumed, you know, that you'd been doing this forever, you know, probably went to college for it and everything else. And then when someone told me one day that you're self-taught, I'm like, what the heck? You know, I mean, seriously, I'll look at of course, you know, try to get measurements and stuff for customers off the engineering drawings. I mean, they about make my head spin. I mean, they're harder to read than a, you know, house plan. So it just shocks me what y'all can do, man. I mean, y'all just, yeah, smart fellas for sure.
Well, that's the good thing though, right? I think a lot of that, you know, being self-taught gives you the ability to think outside the box versus being like, no, it needs to go like this because my book told me so. And, you know, that's how I learned it, you know? So I think we're very fortunate with not only you, you know, but the rest of the bunch that you get to work with, you know, how they're able to, like I said, think outside the box, you know, and get ideas that way.
Oh, it's a truly amazing team. It's such a dynamic and diverse group, and everybody brings something different and something really valuable. It's funny what you said about the drawings, though. I had to learn drawings when I came here, because my idea of a drawing would have been on the back of a lid of a cardboard box to get started.
Right.
So we joke now that CAD used to mean cardboard aided design. I didn't know how to use SolidWorks until I came here, so everything was the old school way. Which is also good, because to have the background of knowing how to do it by hand, I think can be really, I think it's easier to go towards technology than try to learn how to do it by hand if you learned how to do it on the computer first. I think it's a little easier to do it the way I did.
Yeah. Kind of like crawling before you walk kind of thing, yeah. Right? You kind of pick this up and, you know, slowly introduce to it versus just jumping in the deep end.
Yeah, which makes, I mean, total sense, because when I was plumbing, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'd, you know, get ready to install a toilet, and I'm like, whoever designed this is obviously never plumbed, because this is impossible to install, you know, so it's super cool that you were able to actually do it, install, you know, your bumpers and all that, and then, I mean, I just feel like that's perfect, the perfect way to do it, so.
I mean, did you ever think it would grow to where we're at now? You know, we you know, where, you know, you've, like I said, you and Chris have joined forces, and now, you know, we put out 200 plus sprinter fronts in a year, you know, which is a crazy number.
No, but to be fair, I didn't really know what this would ever turn into. And as I mentioned, I didn't start this with the intention of growing it or making a business. I had no business background. I just like to create cool stuff. And then when it was time to get some help, I found some cool people that were willing to do the same thing, work late nights and long hours and hit the grind.
Yeah.
So no, I had no business plan, no business experience.
Oh. Well, I'd say it turned out, you know, like I said, what y'all have been able to do over there, you know, that side of the business, and, you know, is turn out great products, not only, you know, for our van side of things, but we've gotten into the Toyota side of things, you know, in the last few years, and it just continues, you know, the hybrid design, a great design, saving weight, still having strength, you know, it's cool how you've made that carry over from the vans to Toyotas.
Yeah, it's a little bit going back to my roots and most of our roots around here, because I think off-road in the Ozarks is a really big thing. Long before the vans, before Overland was such a buzzword, just mm-hmm. off-road. So this really feels good to have the Toyota products that cater to that.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, absolutely. You know, like Toyota, great, great vehicle, you know, but if you can stay away from adding a 200-pound bumper to the front end, it just, you know, does wonders, you know, helps your suspension. Helps the drivability of the vehicle, and you still get solid recovery points, you know, solid spot to mount a winch. You don't have to sweat anything.
I mean, anyone that lives up north, you know, that's in like a heavy salt belt area. I mean, dude, that aluminum bumper just kills. I mean, because you don't have to worry about all that. You know, I mean, I can't count how many times I've gone up north and seen, you know, bumpers that weren't necessarily taken care of that are just one big block of rust, you know, and it's like, dude, that aluminum, you don't got to really worry about that. And so it's just super cool.
Yeah, rock chips happen, and they happen the most on the front, center, lower portion of the vehicle, which is where that front bumper is. So it doesn't take one rock chip can cause a massive rust problem up north.
Mm-hmm. No, that totally makes sense. Like I said, super cool to see how you tied that in and didn't just come out with a Toyota product, you know, that was similar to what our competitors are doing, you know, and you kept it unique and kept it, you know, true to who we are and what we do and what makes our products, you know, unique.
Yeah, that hybrid design is really kind of our, I don't know if flagship is the right word. It's our thing. You know, mm-hmm. it's what sets us apart from everybody else. And I wish I could take credit for it. It was one of the engineers that was here when I first came here, and he was just throwing out some ideas. He said, "What if this sounds kind of crazy, but what if it wasn't all steel? What if part of it was aluminum?" I said, "Well, good luck welding the steel to the aluminum." And you know, he explained what he meant, and we tried it out and thought it was really cool. Some other people thought it was really cool. And this was the 2014-18 Sprinter front bumper.
Yeah. We still watch people's heads explode, you know, when we tell them how much our Sprinter front weighs, you know, 130-ish pounds, you know, and they look at it and it passes as steel, you know, on the eye test. People just look at it and think that's got to be all steel. But once you start knocking on it and stuff like that, you realize, you know, it's an aluminum shell.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, the strength of them, too, is mind-blowing to me. I mean, we had a guy send us a video the other day of him slamming his Forerunner into a tree. I mean, just slammed into it. And it didn't even look like the bumper cared, you know. So, wouldn't recommend that, by the way. But
yeah, the impact resistance is really good. And a lot of that has to do with that kind of rib structure we put on the inside. But then also the pull strength, because we maintain steel where it really matters, the winch cradle and the shackle mounts and the receiver, if it has that option, and where it attaches to the frame, all that being steel is key. You know, a solid one-piece aluminum bumper, I don't necessarily trust it in the same way that I do to pull against with a 12,000-pound winch.
Mm-hmm. No, and I've done multiple winch pulls with that bumper on my Forerunner. You know, we pulled up over the sand dunes this last time, and it looked like a yard sale. There was, you know, probably four or five cars just stuck in the sand. And I just stopped, pulled my winch line out, and we just started plucking them out one by one and set them all on their way. Bumper worked like it was supposed to. I mean, no shimmies, no shakes. Like I said, it just worked.
That's the goal.
Right? Every time.
Man, it's just one of those deals where even before I started working here, man, I was just such a big, backwoods fan, you know, to tell you the truth. You know, obviously I live in Arkansas, so I'm slightly biased, but man, y'all just kill on your designs. I mean, seriously, they're just so stylish, you know, and functional. So, I mean, it's very rare you get the two together. So, I mean, it's, I mean, man, y'all kill it. Seriously.
Well, I think them, you know, like Evan touched on, you know, he comes from this side of things, the off-roading industry. And so it's like when you can have people that come from that background helping design the product for the people that are, you know, living that same life, you know, it's like it just works. So, yeah, like I said, I think we're all lucky to come where we've come from, you know, off-road industry. And now we work at an off-road place, you know, so it's like it's pretty sweet.
Well, I think you touched on it right there. The team that Chris has assembled here is, I mean, that's the reason that the products are cool, and that's the reason that people love our customer service. I mean, everybody's kind of intertwined. We've all got a bit of an off-road background for the most part. You guys that are selling the product and being the face of the company, you get out there, you live it, you do the camp rides, you lead group rides. You know everything there is to know when it comes to off-roading and what the product needs to do. And that gets communicated to us. If everybody on the engineering team doesn't necessarily have that same background, we all kind of work together. And, you know, some of our products might go through. I think you guys are aware of this, but some of our products might go through 4, 6, 8 revisions before the public sees it. So, I mean, we really beat them up and try to make sure they, like you said, perform like they should, but also look really cool. So there's a lot of input from a lot of different directions.
Yeah. Well, I know these last products that y'all have developed for the Tundra. They just crush, you know. I think y'all hit the nail on the head with what needed to be done for that truck. You know, the rear bumper, adding solid recovery points. You get to keep your lighting, add lights if you want. So I'd say keep doing what y'all do.
The Tundra, one of the coolest things about the Tundra, and this speaks to our team on the engineering side, normally kind of one person spearheads a vehicle and gets input from everybody else. But on this one, each person took a different product, and we didn't set out to do it that way. Just in the name of trying to meet a timeline, it worked out this way. I took the front bumper. Taylor took the rear bumper. Josh did the bed rack, and like on and on. There, one person did each product set, and this kind of shows you how we're all on the same page. The products look like they were all designed by the same person, but they weren't. So that's really cool to me.
That's super cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was the same. I thought it was all group driven. So it's super cool that y'all are on the same page enough to one can do the front, the rear, and the roof racks, and they all come out looking like one person did it. So very, very, very cool.
I think we're going to do more of that moving forward, because everybody has their own strengths, and everybody's really good at working with a certain type of product, whether it be plate or tube. I mean, Cody has his awesome strengths. So does Ivan. And then, you know, Ethan's our newest team member. He's got a fresh perspective too.
Dude, Ethan's got the fire. Like I love his energy. You know, you can tell he's always just eager to help in any way he can. You know, you can tell he's just thankful to be here, you know, and you can tell he wants to work hard and continue to grow us. And so it's like you want another team member like that.
Yeah, he doesn't sit still. He's a go-getter, and that's one of my favorite attributes.
Yeah.
You'll never see him just sitting idly playing on his phone, at least not while he's here. He wants to work.
No, see, beyond helpful, you know, like I said, a great addition to what y'all already have going over there, you know, and I see him just continuing to grow. Like I said, being under y'all, that there's only one place for him to go, and that's up.
As far as this podcast goes, I mean, man, we seriously do appreciate you coming.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I know we see you a lot, but I mean, it really does mean a lot to us for you to, you know, take some time away from your work day and do this with us. And, man, I mean, yeah.
It's just cool to hear, like I said, the side of the business that you're on. You know, like I said, I was unaware of the Tundra stuff, you know, and kind of getting to hear the background of Backwoods, you know, the jump off and how you grew this, you know, and stuff like that, you know, super, super cool. You know, I know you said that you had a lot of great help along the way, you know, so hats off to them, and I'm glad they kept you going and on those hard days, you know, because like I said, it's grown, and now we get to work here and push these cool products.
Yeah,
and that's something I don't get to talk about the backstory as much as I used to, just because it's been a few years now. But also that major timeline shift in 2017, as far as Backwoods goes, like after that SEMA meeting and after Chris actually made an offer that. Let me make sure I tell the story straight, because I didn't also have intentions of selling the business. You know, mm-hmm. I was just out there creating stuff. So. I was in a meeting after SEMA talking with Chris and the rest of the crew here. And I guess it had gotten to a point in the conversation where I couldn't exactly figure out how to get them files, because I had a bunch of cardboard templates and just, I'm not sure how it would work. And I said, you know what?
you can just buy the whole thing if you want. And I was kind of joking, but also a little serious. And Chris goes, yeah, we'd be open to looking at that.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of started that whole process. And it looked like it was just going to be the best way to really take Backwoods where it deserved to be. Cause I'd doubled the size of the shop. I'd added on, and I'd hit a point where I didn't know how to grow, and I didn't know much about bank loans, financing, even things like that. So yeah. I just knew that it was going to be, you know, million plus what needed to be done. And that's not something that I was a little more risk averse than. So once I sold it to Chris, he asked me to stay and continue doing product design and to watch him pour into the brand and the equipment and the team over the next, even right out of the gate, over the next few months. Like I knew it was the right choice.
Yeah.
So to go from where it was in 17 to where it is now, it's just makes me proud to see. I'm glad to be a part of it still. And it's awesome. It provides a lot of jobs, provides a lot of cool products out there in the world, a lot of innovation.
Well, dude, I guess we should probably get back to it, man. But we definitely appreciate you being here and yeah, look forward to continuing this growth and everything like that, which y'all come up with next. And, you know, we'll keep this thing going.
Awesome. Well, I'm loving the podcast booth, by the way. This is cool.
You guys can't see it, but we've got this thing decorated kind of like an art gallery of the most random stuff. It would probably make any woman's head explode if they were to walk in here.
Yes. yeah. It looks like we are in an aisle at Hobby Lobby for sure. So but I mean that in the best way possible. So
yeah, if we can, we'll get a picture up, but it's lovely.
All right, guys. We all have a great rest of your day. Thank you for your time. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one. Peace.
Thanks, guys.
See y'all.